All right, so hey, Michelle, how you doing? Let's start over.
Okay, let's start over.
And then not be deflated.
Okay.
What'd you think of 309 Fall?
I'm a little deflated. I'm a little mad.
You're a little teacup.
I'm a little teapot. No.
Why are you mad, Michelle?
I'm mad. I'm mad at this.
I heard you. I don't know. Why?
Yeah, well, it's probably the full moon. It's probably just, like, affecting my emotion or something because everybody's grouchy around me. But I like to dislike some people, but I don't like it when I dislike other people.
Well, what didn't you like about it?
I didn't like... Okay, we all know Jimmy's going to turn to Saul, but we've seen Jimmy turn to Saul in several ways. And I didn't dislike how they portrayed him, but I really like got this icky feeling about him in this episode. I didn't like it at all. It really kind of bothered me. So I didn't like that. I just felt like everything that they... Okay, I felt like they had like teed us up for this, just this extravaganza of things to happen. And then nothing happened. You know, like Chuck was supposed to get in trouble and then Chuck's still doing his crap, right? And Hector was supposed to take those pills and then something was supposed to happen to him. And that fell flat. Nothing happened with that. And Jimmy just turns into this really slime ball to get his way. I mean, really, like, you know, not against big, you know, not anything that's defensible that I could see. So I really dislike, I like disliking Chuck. I'm kind of tired of Chuck. I'm with you. But I like it when I dislike him. I really dislike how much I dislike Jimmy in this one. They don't need to make us hate Jimmy to turn him into Saul, I don't think. And It just kind of makes me feel tired, you know, that's all.
Well, I didn't think it was the most fantastic episode either. But I don't think I disliked it as much as you did.
There was a lot of good content in it, but it's hard to enjoy good content when it's swimming with this negativity, I think, to me. There was a lot of it that I really liked, and I really liked a lot of the stuff that was going on, like the Sandpiper stuff and all that coming up. I mean, that could have really been good, and I guess he had to do something. But what he did that not just feel so sleazy to you?
And I well, that's what he—that's what he's going to become.
But okay, so they're sleazy, and then they're sleazy to the little guy. Do you know what I mean, or no? Am I just?
Well, he's always been kind of sleazy to the people that deserve it, and you're right. Cyrene, old lady, didn't really deserve his scheming.
Right. Right. It's like he crossed the line of doing something for, you know, the wrong thing, you know, something not right, but for the good, to doing just the wrong thing, just for himself. I don't know. We might have seen it before, but it never felt this sleazy to me before. I really disliked it.
Well, Michelle, I don't know if I can sit here and let you badmouth Vince Gilligan.
Well, sorry.
Michelle, on the medical front, mm-hmm. You know that putting ibuprofen into those capsules for old Hector is not such a placebo, because I read that ibuprofen increases the risk of stroke by a factor of 3.
I think that's a really new thing, though, that's come out, that information, from what I understand. It wouldn't have been well, I don't know. That's not true. I don't know if it was known back then or not. I know I recently heard about it, like within the last, I don't know, maybe year or something. I had never heard that prior to that.
So you think it might not be, it might just be, You think the ibuprofen is totally a benign plot? The thing in the story plot is that it's not supposed to be anything.
Well, yeah. I'm assuming, because if you were going to put something in there to hurt him, you know, like something like that, you can think of things that are a whole lot worse and like more what? Likely. Well, you know, whatever. I mean, any kind of poison that you could put.
Yeah, but that's poison. Putting ibuprofen in is if it increases the stroke factor by 3, and it's just ibuprofen, it's like essentially non-detectable. If you put cyanide in there, then everybody's like, "Oh, that's he got poisoned."
Well, that's a good point. That is a good point, but
that's all I make, Michelle. Good points.
He takes it for his heart, right? I don't know. I just felt like it was kind of, I mean, you know, how often do you take a ibuprofen? How often do you take an Advil if something hurts? You know,
That's why it's the perfect thing to put in there. If it doesn't help him and it could potentially hurt him by a factor of tripling his stroke, it's the perfect thing to put in there because it's essentially non-detectable, undetectable.
Well, and if it was detectable, who would think anything? You know, I mean, even if they could detect it, which I would guess they can, I don't know.
Well, that's what I mean. It's not going to be suspicious.
Right. It's not going to raise any eyebrows. But how much of a letdown was that? Did you not feel that?
I mean, like the fact that Hector gets poisoned but gets pilled. I want to see something else cause it, like something that we don't expect,
and we still
might have that coming.
We talked about that, and I understand that it's a little too predictable, but it just kind of makes the whole like last week that scene was so good, that whole thing with nachos.
Yeah, it wasn't that good. Everybody's freaking creaming in their pants over that scene. That was okay. It was tense, but it wasn't like the drama that everybody claims it is.
Okay, but it was good. It was a good scene. So it should lead to something, right?
Yeah, but now it's almost certain that it's not going to be the pill that does heck. It's too obvious now.
I guess.
What's he going to have another event? Going to take another pill? Boom, oh, that one did it. Finally. I don't know. I think it's almost anti-capsule now.
Well, I've got other questions as we go along, too, because there was a couple things that I was curious why they would have put this in there the way they did. And maybe you have some bigger insight than I did. I like the episode. I just was really counting on this being like a knockout of the park episode with something big happening. And it just fell flat. To me.
What did you think of the ominous foreshadowing of the Omaha Mall where Saul was, or where Jimmy was doing his mall walks?
Tell me, refresh my memory.
Well, the mall where the ladies walk around, it looks just like the Omaha Mall where Gene is.
Oh, yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah, I didn't put that together, honestly. That was funny. I loved that scene. I thought that was really good. Saul in his tracksuit and his headband.
Well, the last time we saw Gene, he was like fainted on the floor, right? So that's present time. Gene's unconscious in that Omaha Mall.
Well, that's terrifying. Because a lot of times went by.
All right, Michelle, let's start it. Paper plate cookies, paper plate and cookies. Reminded me of the cake pops and Gomi. We were kind of talking about that last time.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like a underhanded thing to do, to like worm his way in there to get this information from Irene. But that's the kind of stuff you can forgive, right? Because, I mean, sort of no harm, no foul, right?
You don't think she knew? They were fake? Or they were not homemade?
I don't know. I don't know if she knew, but she was kind. I mean, it was silly, you know, to picture Jimmy at home making and decorating these cookies, which really takes some skill. But, I mean, maybe, you know, I don't know. It was But it didn't hurt anything, you know, whether she knew or didn't know or whatever. I mean, it didn't hurt anything. So that kind of stuff doesn't bother me with him, even though, you know, I mean, it's a lie and maybe it should. And I'm really starting to question how much slack I cut him just in general after this episode. Sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
So what did you think about the Hello Kitty theme? Because they look kind of like Hello Kitty cookies. And Jimmy had the Hello Kitty phone in his drawer. For Jesse.
Well, they were definitely kitty cookies. They didn't look too Hello Kitty-y to me. But, yeah, something. Yeah, little something going on over there,
she
maybe.
She was kind of into kitties or something. She was the lady from the first season with where he did the will for her, and she had...
Felix, the cat.
She had cat. Yeah, she was into cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
and
this
these
is,
cookies reminded him of Felix, her cat. And it's like, oh, good grief. But still.
This lady's Irene, the woman in charge of the class action lawsuit. So he goes in to talk to her, and she's the rep of everything. So she's the one. I thought he was in kind of violation of his legal abstinence here by going in. But I guess if he doesn't talk to her about it, although he did talk to her about it. Pretty borderline there about, you know, he's lawyerish with her.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, particularly since he was on that case for a while. But, you know, he didn't even bring it up. She invited him. But he set it up that way. So, yeah, definitely, you know, is there on the line.
So this is Irene Landry, the lady who Jimmy did the will for in season one. When, if you remember, she was $100 short on the money and didn't even think of it being a big deal. She owed him $140 and she only had $40. So it's a good tip off to us that she doesn't really understand or really doesn't even really care that much about money, which is important later on in this episode.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to have a lot of bearing to her and her day-to-day life. And it kind of tells us that she doesn't have a lot of money either,
she is
though.
Important too, that because Jimmy saw that, like, God, you don't even have $140, that she was what tipped Jimmy off to the fact that Sandpiper was screwing them, because they got an allowance from Sandpiper, and Jimmy's like, well, that doesn't sound right, and that led him into the theft, the overbilling of all these Sandpiper residents, and that's what got him started on all this,
right?
All right, so she tells Jimmy that Aaron Brill of Davis and Maine told her that the case is years away before it gets settled. And Jimmy's concerned with that. He says, you got an offer, right? And she gets out her box of stuff, all these legal notices and envelopes and letters, and shows it. And just says, hey, you can look at it and look through whatever you want. You're Jimmy. I trust you.
But how sleazy is that of Davis and Maine? These people are not 30. And how sleazy is that?
Well, that's what lawyers do. They take advantage of the most money that they can gather for themselves.
Well, yeah, but I mean, all of these people are going to essentially, you know, potentially not even be there by the time this is settled. And then they're talking this Aaron Brill into, like, you know, schmoozing Irene into thinking that she's doing stuff in her best interest. I don't know. All of that stuff just felt really bad to me. And I know that Jimmy wants her to settle because he wants his cut. I mean, that's obvious. It becomes even more obvious. But he's right as far as, you know, at her age, if you win the lottery, you take the lump sum, right? So you have some time to spend this money.
You take the lump sum at any age, by the way, of the lottery.
Well, right. But, I mean, him talking to her about that, I'm just saying, you know, it just seems what Davis and Maine are doing, what he's doing is for himself, but it benefits, I think, them.
Indirectly. Right.
But what Davis and Maine are doing benefits Davis and Maine and at the expense, potentially, of all the clients. So that feels really sleazy to me. And I just hate seeing all of this. I don't know. I just hate seeing these people being treated this way. That like you said, don't know any better.
I said don't pick on Vince Gillian.
Well, you did, but you also said that, you know. money doesn't seem to have much meaning.
It's an important distinction to make about the story that she doesn't even care about money. All I got is, I'll pay you. Whoa, all I got is $40. So, oh, well, I'll pay you later. She doesn't care. It's not she wants to go to the mall and walk around and have friends and sit on a stupid bingo game. She's not a financial wizard.
Which makes it even worse.
She's not scheming to, like, keep the money from the other old people. She's just not. I don't know why they made her in charge of it, for that matter, because of this, but.
I think because she was the first. I think that's all it was. She was the first person to file suit, and then other people jumped on the class action. I think so.
Or she was maybe just the friendliest, most popular person. Like,
well, maybe.
We'll put you in charge, Irene. We all love you. So she tells him to go talk to Aaron. Go talk to Aaron. She'll figure it out. You'll figure it out with her. But I thought it was interesting, Michelle. Then they show the other old ladies kind of catch him there. I put catch him because they see him there with her. If it ever came up that he was with her first or something, that was kind of interesting that they kind of caught him with her, talking to her. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe nothing, but I don't know. I made a note of it.
Yeah.
So Jimmy thinks the math out loud. Did you catch all the math of what he's going to get out of this settlement?
Yeah, I did. Did you?
Yeah, what'd you come up with?
That he's going to get $1,160,000. Is that correct?
Did you figure out the whole thing?
Well, yeah. I didn't write it down, though, but 33% was going to be in some fund, and he's going to get 20% of that fund.
And you call that figuring it out?
That's all I got. What did you get?
The law firm, okay, the settlement was $17,400,000.
Right.
The law firm gets one-third of that.
Right.
And Jimmy gets one-fifth of that. So, yeah, you're right. It's 33% of the total, and then he gets 20% of that. So if you take one-fifth of one-third, it means one-fifteenth. So if you take $17,400,000 and multiply it or divide it by 15, you get what Jimmy gets, the $1,640,000.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Good.
So how much money is that for the ladies, the elderly people?
I'm not sure how many people were in on the suit. Are you?
Yeah, Reddit did a little math on this. So if Jimmy gets a third, that leaves, and well, the legal people get a third. So that leaves $11,600,000 for all the clients. And so if there's 1,000 clients, that's 11,600 people each. And if there's less, then it's more.
You mean $11,600 each? Yeah, I don't think there's that many clients.
Well, there's 180 in the one home, the one address of.
But it would just be the one address, right?
No, it's all of them. That's what Sandpiper had facilities in 5 states. That's what made it so super valuable.
Oh, okay. Okay, but still, if they had, you know, like one facility in 5 states and each of them had 180 people, that's not going to be that many people.
That's 1,000. That's 500. That's 900.
Divided by, or with 11 million divided by that, though, right?
Yeah, 11 million divided by 1,000 is 11,000. So each person would get about 11,000 if it was 1,000 people.
Well, that's not very much.
Might be a lot to ladies sitting around playing bingo all day, though. You know, you're 80 years old and you have no money, essentially, and you get $11,000. It's a nice chunk of money.
I guess, but I mean, how unfair does that even seem? Don't make me feel even sleazier about these attorneys.
Why would that make you feel sleazier?
Because, I mean, so Saul gets rich and they get, you know, a down payment on a car?
They're not going to buy a car, Michelle.
I know, but I just don't like that. I just don't like
it. That's how it works, though.
I don't care. Say something to make me feel better. I don't like it.
All right, I got something very interesting though for you, though.
Okay.
Too. So
okay.
Jimmy's cut is $1,640,000. That was exactly the amount of money that the Kettlemans and very early in this whole series that the Kettlemans, he returned from the Kettlemans, embezzled from the whatever.
Was it really?
And Michelle, $1.6 million, I think, was the amount Jesse and Walt got from the deal for Gus Fring at that motel with the first round of meth that they sold.
Well, that's pretty interesting. I didn't play the game. Did you play? There's like some game you can play while you're watching the show and like learn clues and then get to some extra content or something that they've done just for people who are willing to do that. Did you see any of that?
No, I don't have time for that.
Well, there was something like that, and I read that what they were showing them was about the Kettlemans. So it's really funny that that's the amount that the Kettlemans got.
You think that's the amount that kind of tips the scale, like a million? Like if it was 300,000, it'd be like, oh, okay, that's a lot of money, but yeah, that's all right. That's not that big a deal. You think they figured out like 1.6 million is like a really big amount of money that kind of tips it into being where you might do borderline things for it?
Well, I don't know about that, but I do think that 1.6 million is something that would make anybody sit up and take notice.
I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know if it would cause you to do something that you wouldn't do. I think that's more of a, you know, character issue, so to speak. But it's definitely enough money to get Saul out of. He's not going to have to worry for this year.
No, if he got $100,000, it would take all the heat off of him that he has right now.
I don't know if it would take all the heat off of him. Not $100,000, and
yeah,
I don't
know. He got $16,000 from the stupid Los Sklar Hermanos, and it made him totally cashed out for a couple weeks.
But he has all of these deals with Kim.
Yeah, but if you've got nothing and you get $100,000 and it buys you a couple months, that's a big chunk.
Well, sure. I'm not throwing rocks at, you know, at $100,000. Don't misunderstand. I'm just saying that, you know, there is a difference in that. And do we know, did Reddit know, did they get the totality of this money? Is this money taxed? Do you know that as income? It would be, wouldn't it? Or would it be?
I don't know.
Or would it vary by state? Okay.
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. I didn't even think about it.
Somebody meets Mike at the waiting room at Madrigal Electromotive. Michelle, Madrigal Electromotive was the name of Lydia's company that I could not frickin' remember that other episode we did.
Yep.
Let's call it some other stupid name. But Madrigal Electromotive, the conglomerate that ran Los Pollos Hermanos and all kinds of food companies and, of course, industrial air cleaning processes and all kinds of electrical technology and just huge industrial firm, including even trainloads of methylamine, if you go back and watch parts of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, and maybe laundromats and stuff.
And Mike's waiting to talk to Lydia because she's got a job for him as what she describes as a logistics consultant.
Yep.
For $10,000 a week, this is via Gus Fring. It's the laundering process of his money that he got from the wheel of the truck in earlier escapades.
Yeah, he evidently thought it was going to be a big deal to launder this $200,000, and she let him know that, you know, it's nothing. It's, she called it what, an accounting error, a roundup error, or something like that. It's just nothing compared to the amount of money and the thousands and thousands of employees that they have.
Yeah, this was an interesting. The details sometimes they over explain are kind of fascinating in this. And it was kind of interesting, Mike's questioning her, like, okay, who are you? Who knows that you're here? Who knows that you do this? Who will know that I'm doing this? Why do you want my name and my license? And he's concerned about the details and being recorded and in books somewhere.
Sure.
That was pretty fun. So Mike also wants to change his job title to security consultant. Not that anyone will ever probably care, but instead of a logistics, Mike's not really a computer guy or a strategy guy. He's more of a security guy.
Well, it makes more sense. But yeah, I mean, if somebody were to look, I agree with Mike that that would make more sense. But
what'd you think of Lydia's old style Macintosh on her desk, Michelle? Yeah, that 2003 Mac G4, iMac G4 with the round base and the screen on the arm that would, like, move in and out.
Yeah, you're halt and catch firing me now.
Another show on the West Coast Project Network.
Yeah.
All right, Michelle. he asks about what she's done before with Fring, and she says this is the first time he's ever washed money from or for someone through me. So Mike's kind of special to Fring by having this happen, I think.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see Mike's reaction to that because he's very mistrustful, but you can tell that he is, I don't know, he's thinking something. I'm not sure what he's thinking, but it's probably more like, I couldn't tell if I was supposed to get that he was thinking, oh no, what do I have to do?
No.
Now, because I'm not one. I mean, I'm special.
No.
This doesn't happen all the time.
Well,
no,
maybe that. I thought you meant, what do I have to do in this new job as security specialist?
No. But like with Gus, just in relation with Gus, you know, what is Gus going to expect?
Yeah, he doesn't want to know the score.
Right.
And why are you risking so much for a drug dealer? And she kind of says, he doesn't know the extent of Fring. She says, you don't understand Gustavo Fring.
Yeah, she scoffs at him.
So we chuck over to Cut. We cut over to Chuck and Howard, and they're getting the insurance hike from the lovely people from the frickin' insurance company, which everybody probably hates. Insurance, something you got to buy that never, ever gives you any joy, Michelle.
No, it's a bet against yourself.
And it's all because of Chuck's bar testimony, and they will give them, there's a big increase of everybody in the firm getting doubled their fees, but they'll give them a rider if Chuck can get an assistant. So they have to find somebody to sit in and be Chuck's, essentially double pay somebody to be Chuck's assistant for him to even get covered.
Chuck, well, Rod, and it doesn't even, it can't be just anybody. It's not like they can get, you know, a paralegal or something. They were talking about somebody as, you know, somebody big, somebody like at Chuck's level to sit in, I think.
So do you think something's being teed up here that might put Kim into a position where she would replace Chuck? It's another theory floating around out there.
I didn't think about that, but why? Why would that do that?
Because Chuck doesn't want Howard around. Or shit, Howard doesn't want Chuck around anymore. And why not? You need a sharp attorney. That would
yeah.
be. I think something still has to happen dramatically with Kim, even more than what we saw happen in this episode.
Oh, I completely agree, and I'm not sure where all that's going. That's what most of my questions that I've got on what's going on is with her.
All right, so we'll barrel through this. So Chuck just threatens these insurance people, and Howard doesn't like this at all. Chuck is taking liberties with his speaking on behalf of the firm that I think Howard is just really bristling over. So
yeah, I agree.
The meeting's over. They stand up. You know, well, we'll sue you if you try to do this. And the meeting's over, and Howard grabs drinks and starts to talk to Chuck. So. I thought Chuck was bluffing with money he doesn't have. He's speaking for the firm out of place, and Howard just doesn't like this. He paints a whole new career for Chuck. Time to move on, pal. If you're not any longer at HHM, you could still have a good life being partner emeritus and write the papers you always wanted to do and all the stuff that Chuck's not really interested in.
Yeah. Yeah. He tells him essentially to go into his next venture in life. Hang up your spurs, focus on your legacy, write that book on commerce clause, like we've all always wanted to do, right?
I've read it. It's not that good.
But Chuck doesn't appreciate the suggestions, and then Howard tells him that it's not a suggestion. And that definitely turns the tables on what's going on in that meeting.
Yeah, Chuck's insulted, not just he doesn't like it. He's insulted, and Howard's like, well, I can't be partners with someone whose decisions I can't trust. And that just happened in 2 minutes ago. Chuck's calling shots he shouldn't be calling. And I don't blame Howard. Chuck's a huge liability.
Yeah, Chuck doesn't, or Howard doesn't trust his judgment. He says he's become unpredictable, but come on, the guy's been unpredictable for how long now?
Yeah, I still say Howard's one of the most spinning weather vane direction evidences of a character I've ever seen. Like, hate the guy, love the guy. Hate the guy, love the guy. Does he like Kim? Does he hate Kim? He's kind of a quasi-hero again here for standing up to Chuck. I kind of like Howard doing this.
Yeah, but just for a minute. And then he turns back into the Howard that we dislike again. I try not to read anything, as I've said a million times on our podcast, before we podcast, because I like it just to be all my ideas before I get other people's ideas. But as I was watching the upcoming on Facebook, or one of the scenes on Facebook of the upcoming, they were talking about Chuck, and essentially, I couldn't help but read it. It was right there, and it said something about kind of like the same thing you've been saying, that they can't figure Chuck out. You know, whose side is Chuck on? And I thought that was interesting because it is hard to tell. It's hard to tell.
Chuck was on Vulture. They interviewed Michael McKean, and it was hard to even listen to that. Like, I don't even think I like Michael McKean. He's kind of a pompous ass. He's kind of
really.
Yeah, he's kind of a, I don't know. I guess he's a really good musician. He was in Spinal Tap and all that, but he's, you know, he's kind of like, oh, I'm an old great actor now, and I don't know. I didn't like it. But he did reveal a couple important things. He said, like, in this Vulture interview, that Chuck is 10 years older than Jimmy. And what else did he say? Something about how when their mother died, their father hung on for like a year afterwards, and then he died. Or maybe the father died and then the mother died. I think the mother died, though, because didn't Marco and Jimmy go to the mother's funeral, the mother's funeral?
I don't remember. Sorry.
But they died within a year of each other, and that's kind of what happened back home. It wasn't really that interesting of an interview with Michael McKean. I'm tired of Chuck, even in real life.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's weary because they show him like he's faking it, right? Like, even in this scene, he is trying to act like he's fine to Howard, who gets up and turns the lights off when everybody leaves. And, you know, he gets up and he turns them back on. You know, I'm well. And he grabs the light. And, you know, of course, Howard says this isn't what well looks like.
He's desperate. Yeah, he's desperate.
Yeah, but we see this like roller coaster, it feels like, with him. Don't you feel like that? Like, it's like, and I'm talking about with Chuck, like, we see him kind of, you know, go up and down.
No, I think he's desperate. I think a year ago he would have said, I don't want these lights on. It's too painful for me. You know I have a condition. And now he's like losing traction with everybody, and he's trying to prove that he's normal because it serves him better.
I guess, but I think he lost traction with himself too, though. I don't think he even believes his own lies anymore. I think he knows it's not physical now, or he kind of insinuated that last episode.
He may know that, but he still feels it. So right. he's still psychosomatically suffering from it.
It's just, I don't know, tiring to feel him continue to do this. Because we've seen a lot of this. I agree with you. For a long time, I was not over Chuck. I think you got over Chuck much faster than I did. Because this year, at the beginning of the season, I still wasn't over it. And I still wanted to see, like, some resolution. And I was ever hopeful that it would be a good resolution. But anyway, now I'm just like, come on, get to something. Can we get somewhere?
Well, there's so much other good stuff pending that you don't want to waste any minutes with Chuck. So Kim goes to the oil field now with this guy, this Gatwood guy.
Yep.
What's his name? His first name? You know his name?
I don't know his first name. Gatwood Oil is what I put down.
Well, that's a good name for a guy in an oil company.
Right.
So it's on the Texas-New Mexico border. I think he literally draws of his toe in the sand. Like, they're literally on that border. Like, here's the line of the state. Well, that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was like metaphoric.
I don't think so, because he was actual. At the well. That's the problem. The well straddles the border, and some of the oil's in New Mexico and some's in Texas.
Yeah, they said, like, tell me if I got this wrong, because I don't think I did, but like underground or something, one of the salt walls or something fell. And so they're actually drawing oil from New Mexico in place of from Texas, where his pumps are.
Right.
And so that's the problem. His pumps and everything are all on the Texas side, but some of the oil under the ground is now coming from New Mexico. That's how I understood it.
Right.
Okay. And so they're trying to tax him for that. So he's getting like essentially double taxed.
Yeah, they're both trying to get his money. So he says to Kim, they're out there by the oil well, and he says to her, so you said on the phone you had a solution? And Kim says, yeah, I thought about it. And what you shouldn't do is don't negotiate a lease. Instead, just pay damages to the state that feels like they need a lease with you. And I think that's New Mexico.
Right.
So, yeah. And the guy's like, kind of a payoff. And Kim said, yep, no taxes. But the only catch is they have 2 weeks to figure this out. So it's kind of a payoff. It's kind of a Jimmy-ish or Saul-ish solution that Kim came up with. It's a payoff. It's not really, it's not illegal, but it's kind of a creative solution to this.
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on. It's not like this Gatwood guy can do something to not get that oil right there. You know, I mean, I guess he could shut down his pumps or something. But, I mean, he can't, unfortunately, underground, it's like, what could he do to stop this? He's a victim of sorts to what's happening to him. And if you stop and picture all the money that would potentially take from his company, if you talk about taxes on that amount of money times two, I mean, you know, after overhead and everything, what would that do? He's pretty much all but said that it would ruin him, you know, and this is not this guy's fault. So I don't really picture what she's doing as being, I don't know, Jimmy or Saul-esque. I picture it being like a solution so he can keep his business and all the money and stuff that he's put in it. This guy wasn't trying to scam anybody or get away with anything, and he doesn't even like what's going on. He just doesn't want to go under because it's going on. So I just felt like she was really seriously trying to find a solution for the guy, and the guy liked
it. When Saul Goodman takes Walter White's money and launders it, he's not scamming anybody.
Come on. That's not the same thing. This guy isn't Walter White. This guy isn't making meth.
No, I'm not saying this guy, a Texas oil guy, is Walter White. I'm saying that Kim's solution is creative, just like Saul is clearly like way on the illegal side of the border creative, but she's not like saying, okay, well, here's what I'll do. I'll try to defend you in court so you don't have to, so you get out of this lease. She comes up with a creative quasi, I mean, it's a unique solution. That is interesting. It's not totally like White Hat.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, so what do you think about her getting stuck in the sand? She makes a note in her voice recorder and then gets her car stuck in the sand.
Okay, first of all, I was watching it with I watched it by myself first, and I didn't like the guy driving off. As soon as the guy drove off and left her out there, I was worried. I don't know why. When she got stuck, it seemed kind of ridiculous. It's flat ground, and
yeah,
obviously
she could have rocked
that
car out of that in 2 seconds.
Right. And then when I watched it with Mike tonight, of course, you know, he's like, that's ridiculous. You know, he had a much stronger, you know, you're not going to get stuck right there like that. That's not going to be a problem. But now, this is my question, okay, because she goes and she gets a piece of wood, which honestly is probably something I would do in that same situation. So I bought every bit of that. But she rocks the car, she gets the car out, and then the car starts going toward one of those pumps, and she jumps in the car and she's really stressed out. I mean, she's like, and you would be shaking and everything. What's the purpose?
No purpose. No purpose either. No okay. porpoise or purpose. I don't see why they had to do that. It's like it's a prelude or a premonition that she's going to have a car problem later, but it didn't serve anything for me. And it was dumb. It was dumb to get stuck. She would have never, ever, as a woman in a dress, been able to put, if a car's stuck enough to be stuck, she would never, ever be able to push it herself out of the stuckness. And then, oh, it's scary. It's almost going to hit the pump. So what? It would have crashed at 3 miles an hour into the pump and stopped. It's not like it's going to be a fiery oil explosion. It was stupid.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure. I couldn't figure that out. I had no idea why they would go to the trouble to put that scene. I actually made a note. Ask Mike what the purpose of this scene is.
What is the meaning of this?
What is the meaning of this? Yeah, what is the meaning of that? I don't know.
Couldn't grasp it.
The only thing I could gather thinking about it, and it just is so dim that I can't imagine that's it, but just to show how stressed out she is. Because when she gets back in the car, she's literally like shaking and trembling and putting her head on the steering wheel. We don't see Kim have those kind of reactions too much. She's really strong, confident, and all that. But this was a shaking incident.
They're overplaying that hand a little too much too. Coffee? Do you have enough coffee? And she's getting the paperwork ready at the office. And
oh, yeah.
She's tired. Yeah, She's working two jobs. She's working too hard. She's stressed. We get it. But I don't think you get your car stuck like that. It's stupid.
Yeah.
So in the parking garage at Howard's building, Howard pulls in. Jimmy's down there waiting for him to talk to him about Sandpiper.
Can I just say that Howard pulls in like an asshole? Can we talk about that?
Not
just
Howard.
One second.
I can't let you bad talk Howard's driving, Michelle.
I mean, the way he pulled into that parking garage just made you dislike him.
Why?
From the
get-go.
What
did he do?
He just, like, you know, screeched the car in, and then it showed him pulling in, and he's got his nameplate right there beside the elevator. I don't know. It was just so...
Well, if you owned your own building and had a parking spot, wouldn't you be right by the elevator?
I absolutely would. It's just more reason to dislike him. That's all. I mean, he, you know, screeches in there with the music blaring, and then he's just such a jerk.
Well, Jimmy's waiting for him to talk about Sandpiper, and Jimmy just says, hey, it's time to settle, which, again, kind of legalese, and now he's dealing with Howard, who could say, dude, you're on probation. You can't talk to me about any of this. I don't know. It seemed like I was worried about this. Maybe it appears for nothing, but He's dressed up like a lawyer. He's talking like a lawyer. He's discussing legal things with other lawyers who don't like him. It just seemed worrisome, but I guess it's probably not. But somehow I was worried. And Howard accuses Howard of holding out for more money and screwing everybody in the process just for their own benefit, his own benefit.
And he is. That's what he's doing. And Howard doesn't even deny it. Howard says, oh, suddenly now you're worried about him? You know? I mean, he doesn't deny that that's happening.
Right. I think it really is happening.
Yeah, I do too.
And I believe Jimmy does kind of care about these elderly people. Like, he does kind of love them. Like, he's kind of friendly with them and he likes them. I know he's desperate now and he's doing things that are borderline, but I think he really does believe, like, if you wait 3 years, a few of them are going to die and never see anything from this. So Michelle, we could work a little Fargo into this if you want.
Okay, let's do.
So Fargo's another podcast on the West Coast Project Podcast Network, but, Howard talks to him and pulls out his wallet and shows him some money and says, here, you want money? You're begging for money? Bring a tin cup, you bastard. But he says, talking to you is like talking to Gollum.
Yep.
And I thought right away of Citizen Z in Fargo, who was Gollum in Fargo last episode. But Howard is talking about Gollum from Lord of the Rings, J.R.R. Tolkien's story.
Right.
And Gollum was the one who was like, precious, bring me my food. And he was like always kind of living on the fringes of things and needing things from other people. Transparent and pathetic. That's the Gollum Howard meant. But
right.
I have thought of some stuff that we didn't talk about in Fargo that were interesting. DJ Quayles, J.D. Quayles, what's his name? Gollum. He was the Citizen Z guy.
Okay.
Golem was a Jewish creation in mythic, whatever they call their mythical verses or Bible or whatever. But it's a golem is a creature created from clay or dirt. And it's just anthropomorphic, no form or anything till they shape this clay or dirt into a being. And essentially that's what they portrayed this Citizen Z as. So if you think about it, when Nikki and, sorry for everyone who doesn't watch Fargo, but.
But you should.
Nikki and Wrench had the chain around his neck and they were choking him to death and he had him. He thought, oh, good, they're going to at least choke him out. And the chain cut his head off.
Right.
And that's because he's kind of a clay figure, that chain should never have gone through a human body's neck like that easily.
That's a great point.
But if he's clay or dirt or, you know, some amorphous substance that's, like, not bound together really well, that's what happened to him. I think that's why his head got cut off.
That is very interesting.
So I think the Jewish beliefs that golems are created by beings that are like gods, if not God himself, to serve certain things. And that was what DJ Quayles was in that story. But anyway, back to Better Call Saul. Hector's flicking his lighter. And he's all nervous and mad about something. And we pan back and Nacho and Gus are with him. And I'm going to assume that the person on the phone, he's waiting for a phone call. Phone finally calls and the phone finally rings and it's Juan Bolsa. I'm putting that voice as Juan Bolsa, the other Mexican cartel guy.
Right.
Don Juan Bolsa. And he says, our friend by the pool, and I think he meaning Don Eladio.
Sure.
Or Don Alito, as Michelle from Tennessee says. Our friend by the pool likes the combined transport method, and it will be this way from now on. So it's a slap in the face to old Hector here that Gus's way is the way, the better way.
Right.
And everything now goes through the Chilean. You can keep your territory forever, but you're subjugated below the Chilean now. So it's a total slap to Hector.
And they've evidently all been called to the same spot to wait on this phone call, too, because Hector's sitting there. You know, they're waiting, and the phone call comes. I thought Hector was waiting to talk to Gus and just kind of being dramatic, but that wasn't it at all. They were waiting on this phone call to come, so they've all been called to this place to hear this together, I felt like.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's almost like Chuck being disgraced in front of all of his peers. Here's Hector being disgraced in front of all of his associates.
Right. Just so there's no confusion about it or anything. And Hector was not happy, to say the least.
So Hector has his little incident and grabs for his pills. They seem to work and he settles down. And that was like, wah, wah.
Yeah, so, I know. Placebo. Placebo works, I guess.
Michelle from TN, always looking for death and murder and strokes at every chance she gets.
No, I just want something to happen. This is the penultimate episode. Come on, guys. Give us something.
Well, he smashed the phone.
I guess. They are expensive.
All right, Jimmy at the mall, just like Omaha. How many phones have they wrecked in Breaking Bad? Every scene, they're snapping a phone in half.
That's true. Of course, I do it, you know, all the time for absolutely no, you know, acting.
God damn it!
Well, not deliberately.
Cut me off in traffic. All right, so Jimmy's at the Omaha like mall. He's walking around. And he's got his red headband on. He's all mauled up.
This was great. Did you love that?
I loved everything
about this. It was dumb, but this is the kind of thing I don't mind seeing him do. And it really makes me question me, but I don't mind seeing him do this kind of stuff. It was so, first of all, I was wondering what he was doing. But him in there talking about, oh, yeah, I'm a mall walker. I've been out of it for a while because of his, what did he say? Plantar fasciitis or something. But, you know, these shoes take care. I mean, it was great. Him in that bright white jogging suit of the 80s, you know, with that red headband. And he's just in there waiting on these people. He just knows no bounds.
If you're wearing a red headband, your hair should not be perfectly coiffed underneath it. If you're wearing a headband, it should be serving some purpose. And that was totally for visual.
Sure.
It was totally for aesthetics. He looked like a poser he looked like a mannequin in a, you know, whatever, Dick's Hardware, sportswear. But he was all glammed up to meet these ladies mall walking. And to play them against each other, which was kind of funny.
No, that's not funny. It's really bad. This was really, not yet, but it's getting there.
He's there to break up the class action, essentially, to make the ladies question Irene.
So you gotta stop and think, though, Mike. Seriously, think about this for just a minute. If you just stop and think about it, the goal is to get Irene to change her mind and go ahead and settle this class action suit and go against what her attorneys are telling her. Who would think to go to this length? We saw the trunk of his car with all the different sizes of shoes and everything. He's thinking, how can I turn people against her? What all can I do to put a bug in their ear to turn against her? Even so much as giving her these really expensive walking shoes that he knows people are going to notice because they're noticeable shoes, and then use that against her. And then he has to think, how am I going to do this that I get these to her? And he pulls her away from the group. I mean, this is elaborate stuff.
It's a long game. I give you that. But it's not that. I mean, it's pretty much worth it if it works. So he gets like what? Say he gets 10 pairs of shoes and they're $50 or $100 each.
Or $200. They got to be more expensive than that. Nobody's going to notice a $50 pair of shoes.
Okay,
right?
So they're $2,000. He spends one of them and he returns the other nine. I mean, it's a long game. It's not that spectacular.
It's so freaking devious. I mean, it's really like down and dirty devious.
Do you think there's another way he could have done it?
Well, if he had been an attorney, yes. Considering the situation that he's in, I don't know. Because, I mean, is he even allowed to talk to him about this kind of stuff? If he were allowed to talk to him and he got him in a group and he did the little peanut thing that he does in a little while, I thought that was perfect. Just tell him. I mean, he did to the other people. Why not with her, too? You know, explain to them what these lawyers are trying to do.
So why don't you think he did that?
I don't know. I think they were trying to show us truly, and I mean, we've seen the dark side, you know, in Breaking Bad and stuff like that, but this was dirty, and I just think they wanted us to see that in Jimmy, and I guess we need to, but we need to be able to like somebody in this show, and I don't know, it really icked me out. I didn't like it.
All right, Michelle, well, this will cheer you up.
Okay.
Nacho goes home at night and talks to his father, and he warns him about Hector taking over his shop, and his father knows the name Salamanca. Nacho tells him he's back working with the Salamanca, so something had happened before that Nacho either got out of or his father helped him with or something, and he drops right back, and he's working back again with the Salamancas. The again part is the creepy part.
I agree.
First of all, how about this? Can a father take the advice that not just trying to give to him from a son? Just wait and do nothing and let it blow over? That seemed pretty unacceptable advice.
Yeah, but Nacho's right? I mean, what can he do? Nacho wants his father to live, and that's the only way his father's going to survive this. That's the only way now. He's done what he could on his end to change the outcome and didn't change it. And, I mean, what else could Nacho do?
He can go walk up to Hector and blow his head off. Seriously. And sacrifice himself. Because his father's never going to take this advice. just sit it out, Dad. Just wait. Everything will work out. That's stupid. His father's never going to do that.
Okay, but say that he does that. You know, I mean, I don't know, and I don't know anything about this kind of situation, but they may not kill Nacho if he does that to Don Hector. They may go to his father then. And Why? Do something to his father in front of him, because that's what he was doing it for, was to protect his father.
They don't know that, though.
Well, I don't know, but I'm just saying, I don't
it's
know
Hector's
that they
idea
would...
to do that. So I would go up if I was as desperate as Nacho, and I thought he's got to believe his father's not going to listen to this advice, especially when he tells him to get the hell out of the house. That's probably what we're going to see coming up. Something pretty dramatic with Nacho, that you can't just tell Papa to wait it out. And now he's got to do something way more dramatic.
Yeah. Did you watch the upcoming?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
And plus Nacho's already seen the pill not work once. So.
Right.
So we go back to HHM. Secretary Julie gives a message to Chuck, from Chuck to Howard. And Howard, this was dumb too, Michelle. God, this episode is fraught with stupidity.
I know.
Howard gets her all started up on the retirement party before he even opens the frickin' envelope.
Yeah, I mean, what did he think? That was Chuck's resignation letter or something? And why would he think that with the way they left things? It didn't make any sense.
The letter says that he's suing them. Chuck's back at home cooking with all the lights on, the electric stove, everything, Michelle. Even the stick blender that I told you I got from reading about it from, what's his name, to blend wine.
Yes, to aerate your wine.
Tim Ferriss, yeah. You put a stick blender in your glass. It's actually, I don't know if it does anything, but it's freaking fun as hell to do it.
Do you still do that?
You foam up your... I haven't done it in a while. Yeah. But it was fun to do it when I did it.
Yeah.
Chuck's back at home doing all the solo cooking and everything. He says, I'm back to normal. And we learn a couple things about him, that $8 million is his payout if they want to really fully get rid of him. And there's no way that Hamlin, and McGill has that money. So he's trying to stay in play here with HHM. And we also see he's still feeling the pain, because after Howard leaves, he shakes his hand from holding that stick blender.
Well, that's just it. It's just all a farce on Chuck's side. So it's like Chuck's fighting this battle that he still isn't capable of, you know, performing if he wins. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me.
All right, so Jimmy's going to play some bingo. He gets a magnetic paint can and a syringe and pokes it into the bingo balls and makes them magnetic.
I actually looked that up to see if you could do something like that. And I couldn't find anything about it, but now I'm concerned about my search history on Google. But but seriously, I couldn't find anything about that. I was going to see
if that
would work.
You could probably magnetic paint like a kid's room, and they stick magnets on the wall and stuff. There's probably a more practical purpose for it. But
who would think to do that, though?
Jimmy McGill.
Yeah, look at the links to which he'll go.
Yeah, I'm not so sure how well it would work, though, because I question the physics, Michelle. Because a bingo machine like that, the lotto picking machine, where the ball, it doesn't really work by magnets. It works by air pressure, and the balls are under pressure, and they flop around in the air until one of them gets sucked into the tube that distributes it as a single selection.
Yeah, Jimmy, I didn't think it was magnetic. Are you sure it was magnetic?
Well, that's what Jimmy's scam was.
Because I thought it was just weight. I thought it had something to do with the weight of the ball.
Well, that would
make
it less likely to float up to the part of the machine it exits to be selected then. So the way it really works is that they blow around in the air until one of them hits that opening and gets sucked up in there, and then that's the one that's picked. But Jimmy puts a little magnet in there, and the magnet paint in the ball attract each other, and that one he picks five in a row, which was kind of hokey too. But this was, and he gives Irene the card, the game-winning card, and she wins essentially this bingo game in five straight calls of the bingo letters.
Right, and right before she walked in, he's funny doing this bingo game. You know, B9. Let's hope our biopsy is B9.
We've seen that. I mean, we've seen that before. That was cheesy, so too.
So cheesy, but I like that. Okay, I like that. But then, you know, she comes in and he gives her this card that, I don't know, it was very contrived, right? And then she wins with that card and nobody thinks anything. I mean, wins, like, he had pointed out in the game before, I think he called, like, 062 or something. He goes, I think I've called 62 numbers and no one's won so far. So he pointed out that it went on and on and on and on to this group of people. And then she walked in and five calls in and she wins. So it's a big deal.
She's a pariah. She stands up to, and Jimmy says, hey, how about a nice hand for our friend Irene? And
looks back. I know. Yeah, but first he's like looking, who said that? You know, who won?
So he's really putting her on stage to be embarrassed and just dissed by all of her friends. So then he goes to comfort her and suggests that she take the settlement and consider their needs. Maybe they're mad at you for something. What could it be? Maybe the settlement. Maybe that would help things. So he's brought his plan to fruition here. All right. Kim's working now with the Getwood Oil copies with Francesca, getting ready for this deadline that she has. She puts a bunch of little programs together, and she's 20 minutes behind schedule. And Jimmy walks in, Michelle, with a bottle of Zafiro Anejo.
He does.
The tequila that we've seen a couple times before.
That's the tequila that Gus poisoned that later killed Eladio and all the other guys around the pool, too.
It's also the first tequila they got in their first con together. Jimmy and Kim did their first con.
Yep.
So
yep,
it's special tequila. But here Jimmy is a... This is Jimmy's biggest ass move in the whole show, I thought. Kim's rushed. She's worried. She's trying to get her stuff together and do something very important. He wants her to stop and celebrate and drink tequila. He's way too overbearing. He could have waited 5 hours to do this, or that night, or tomorrow. He's trying to press upon her to stop everything you're doing and celebrate my victory. It's selfish.
I agree. It was very annoying. I mean, we've all been in situations where we're really pressed for time and you really have got something that you got to get done. It's really important or important to you. And something else comes up and you wish you had time to attend to something else, but you just don't. There's just no time. And so you have to focus and hyper focus on what you're doing. And yeah, I could not agree more. He was very frustrating. He's like, you're already late. You know, give me 5 minutes and drive 60 in place of 55. I'm just glad she didn't stop and drink that tequila before she took off, because that would have been really bad.
Well, Francesca's willing to drink some tequila. And Michelle, yep. I thought this was trouble brewing here. I thought Jimmy and Francesca were going to get drunk and he was going to hit on her, because he's hit on her before as Saul Goodman. He has. He's made a point to, like, where being almost distasteful with her, and not almost, very distasteful with her. And she's like, get away from me. You make me sick. Like in Breaking Bad, when she's like been working for him for 5 years or whatever.
Oh, I don't remember that.
He's hit on her. He's like making fun of her breasts, and like he thinks she's kind of hot because she's, you know, got big boobs. So I thought he was going to hit on her, and she does take a drink of the tequila, and she's like, that's smooth. She's squinching her face, though. It made it look kind of like she was, like, faking it, that she thought it was smooth.
Yeah, she's just, I mean, he doesn't give her a choice to do it. I mean, she's shooting tequila out of a coffee cup, and, you know, he didn't give her any choice in that.
It's on Zafiro Anejo, though, Michelle.
I'm sorry. You're right. You're right.
No, but I thought she might have been a bit of a party chick, and like she might have gotten into it with him, and then Kim would have come back, and they're both like clothes off on the couch or something. But nope, it's just a quick shot, and that's over. Kim drives to the hearing. She's rehearsing her statement. She blanks out and crashes, and her life is now in disarray, just like those papers blown out of her car.
Yeah, that was rough, wasn't it?
So that was a wah-wah ending, too.
It was. See, that's what I said. I mean, I hate to be negative Nancy on this. I really do. But I was just so deflated with this episode. I had such high expectations of it, and it just...
All right, Michelle, that's it for 309 Fall. What'd you find out about 310 Lantern?
Okay. Almost nothing.
Sorry,
almost
I'm a little pressed for time after our last podcast with Fargo, which had like a freaking biblical plot to it that took 2 hours to record the podcast. It took me 6 hours to re-edit the podcast. And once you post a fucking podcast, you cannot unpost it and I know you can, all you IT idiots out there that... calling me an idiot. I know you can do it. I know there's a way, but I could not figure it out. I had to change the name of it and repost it after editing it for like, I spent all freaking day working on that thing.
I am so sorry. That is so bad. I thought if you redid it, tell me if I'm wrong. I thought if you redid it, that when like iTunes picked it up again, because they pick it up as you know, whenever, that it would change it. Is that not true?
No, it would not. It would. I chopped it from 2 hours to like, okay, 1:50. And you can't just chop, you can't just cut like a big chunk out and hope it flows, right? You got to listen to the whole thing every time you edit it.
I know.
So you got to cut out like 18 seconds at a time here, 22 seconds over here. Mm. Oh, good. I worked my way up to 10 minutes. That'll probably do it. Nope. It won't load. Okay. Chop it down to 1 minute. To 1 hour and 30 minutes. Nope. Chopped it down to 1 hour 10 minutes. Nope. Then I'm like, wait a minute. We got podcasts that are 1.5 hours, 1 hour 40 minutes before. What the hell? So I finally renamed it after I gave up. I went to bed. Like the next day, I gave up on it. And then I woke up in the morning like, maybe I'll try to rename it. And then it loaded, so...
I'm sorry. I understand.
It was a great, it was a good podcast. We had a lot of good stuff we talked about, and I cut it all away. And, you know, now it's like 1 hour and 15 minutes. So, anyway, Fargo TV on West Coast Project. You can listen to it. Also 309 of Fargo. So,
yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was one of our better, you know, I thought it was a, I didn't love the episode, but I loved our conversation about it, which I think is a great thing about podcasts sometimes. So, but you liked it. Anyway, okay, the finale, Lantern. Chuck is saying he's willing to let bygones be bygones and they can settle it with a simple handshake, while Howard's just looking at Chuck's extended hand. We see Hector going into Poppy's business, which is Nacho's dad, and calling for, you know, saying, where's Poppy? And, Jimmy is saying if he had to do it all over again, he'd do some things differently. And we also see Kim in a arm cast. When I went to AMC.com, the sneak peek is like 1.5 minutes of Nacho is giving Hector a tour of his dad's shop. And he's telling them how they're going to do things there. It's quiet at night. We're going to do everything around back, et cetera.
Hector's telling Nacho, or Nacho's telling Hector?
Nacho's telling Hector how he's got it all planned out. Hector is asking, where's Poppy, which is the little tiny bit that we saw. And Nacho is assuring him that Poppy's good and he's going to be the one to handle this there, that he's going to be the one there. Hector sees Poppy looking through a glass window, like a door, through a doorway in the back, and he goes back there with Nacho following him, looking worried. And he introduces them, Nacho does, and we find out that Nacho's father's name is Manuel, and of course, you know, we're calling him Poppy, but Poppy does not greet Don Hector as he's introduced. He just stands there, and Hector says, relax, we're all amigos. So that's all I know.
Oh, good, they're friends then.
Yeah, if there was any question. So at least we know we're going to see some of that in the finale. You know, I guess they can pull this out. I guess they can show us maybe what does happen with Hector, which is
well,
what I guess.
More importantly, what happens to Nacho, because we kind of know what happens to Hector.
Well, what happens to Hector happens. I think we've been waiting for this, though.
What's more of a stupid ending for Hector, that he gets traumatized and stroked out by something physical, or that this pill finally works and he finally has a heart problem enough to give him the stroke? Either one is like kind of overplayed a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah, a little anticlimactic now. I'm starting to think that maybe Poppy has something to do with what happens to Don Hector. I don't know. Or who knows? Maybe Nacho. Maybe Poppy starts to do something and Nacho does do something.
Who's with Hector? Who's with Hector at the upholstery shop?
I don't remember.
He's not going to go on bodyguarded.
No, I think it's like the group, but I don't know that I noticed anybody other than Nacho there with him. But
cousins,
I think it was maybe all of them.
Cousins,
yeah,
are probably in. Well, this is in Mexico, right? This guy, this.
No, I don't think so. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
That's why he wants to go there, because it's in Mexico. He needs to commute back and forth to Mexico.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Okay.
That's the whole point.
I didn't think so. I thought the point of it was to have the businesses in the U.S. that they can launder the money through, the money. And I mean, all the businesses that we've seen are in the U.S., but I mean, I could be wrong.
No, that's why that's where the Regalo Delgado, Lalado Gregado, the frozen gift ice cream truck, went to Mexico, back and forth. That's what they want, is to need to have a legitimate business to go back and forth to take the money and drugs back and forth.
Okay.
And it's probably hard to find those that you can get your hooks into, so this is why it's perfect for Hector, because it's like, oh, good, your dad, that's perfect. He's the man. He's the new connection. All right, Michelle, well, that's it for 310 Lantern. Do you have any other final thoughts? Final predictions?
No, I have no prediction. I just hope we see something. I want to see something. I want to see some kind of resolution at the end of this. It's been kind of, I mean, I know with the Americans, there was a lot of disappointment in how nothing kind of was settled and the way everything ended with that one. And I just really hope that they don't let us down.
Yeah, Fargo's turning out to be the best, except for The Leftovers. The Leftovers knocked out of the park.
I still haven't seen it. So you and Jane with your teasers on there. I think I'm through 4 and on, what is it, The Handmaid's Tale, I'm through, 9?
Yeah, so 10 comes out tonight.
Yeah, exciting
stuff. Or tomorrow.
Stuff. Like
it comes out on Wednesdays.
Yeah, Wednesdays. So, yeah, I have no idea what they're going to do. I just hope that they don't turn us against, Jimmy anymore, because Saul in Breaking Bad, despite the fact that he's not on the up and up, you like Saul, and I think that's kind of what made this the series good, is because we like Saul. And I really hope they don't make us not like Saul. That's all.
Do you think Kim and Nacho survive episode 10?
Well, Kim, I saw her with a cast on her arm. So I think Kim's okay. Physically, I think she's going to be okay. Nacho, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm kind of... My prediction is, and maybe it's just because it's what I want, I'd like to see Nacho hang around for a little while and maybe even kind of get, I don't know. He's kind of like the liaison in a way between Mike and Gus. So I don't know.
Wouldn't it be kind of cool to see, like, Jesse? Like, because if this is 5 years before Breaking Bad, 2003, 2008, so Jesse was maybe, 1 or 2 years out of high school, and if he dropped out, he might even be younger. So say he was, like, 18 or 19 when Walt first met him.
Sure.
And so he'd be 13 or 14. That'd be kind of interesting to see Jesse cross paths with some of these people.
I mean, it really would. There's like this world of opportunity and great characters and stuff. Skinny Pete. I mean, we could see a lot of them.
Yeah,
you
I don't
know?
Care about those guys. That's all stupid. Badger, Skinny Pete. I want to see real shit happen. This show owes a payoff coming. It's been dragged. It's put off this payoff, and it better be something. It better not be an Americans.
Well, I feel kind of bad because I feel like I kind of talked you into. I feel like my negativity of this episode rubbed off on you, and I apologize for that. I really do. And anybody else that it rubbed off on.
I thought it was bad before I caught your contagious negativity.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hate it.
They usually don't last long. They don't have a bad losing streak on Breaking Bad, though, so they're pretty good at coming back to life.
I agree. And it's been great. I mean, it's been great. And the last episode was really good. And I think you've heard me do nothing but brag on them in the last few weeks. Every you know, Tuesday when we come in here, I'm like, oh, I'm so pumped up for the show because I just love it. And so, you know, just not this week. Sorry, guys.
All right, Michelle, see you next week on Fargo, on Better Call Saul, on Not on the Americans, and not on Louis, not on The Slap, not on The Affair.
No, but
not
we did
on
a
and Catch Fire.
We scathing tweeted about Zevon.
Warren Zevon, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, that was good. So,
by the way, Lawyers, Guns, and Money cross almost all of our podcasts, if you think about it. Lawyers, Jimmy, Better Call Saul, Guns with a lot of things, Americans and Better Call Saul, and Money, of course. I guess they're pretty ubiquitous terms, but...
Yeah.
Russians and all that good stuff.
Yeah, there is a lot of cross-reference.
We'll make up for the 2 hours on this one only being 1 hour and 18 minutes.
Okay, good.
All right, talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.